Harold Ellis was the porter at Woodlesford Station, and part of his job was to make sure that the signal lamps were changed every week. He was on his way down on the line towards Waterhague on the right-hand side to change the distance signal lamps. And he was actually facing the traffic under normal circumstances, which would be coming towards him. But unfortunately, there was a light engine going into Waterhague, and it was running tender first. And it went down, and it approached him, of course, with the tender first. That was probably one of the reasons why he didn't hear it, because it was coming tender first. It knocked him down, and he went right under the train, under the engine, and came out the other side. And unfortunately for him, his leg just flew up as he fell, and it took his foot off. Now, the first thing that we got to know about that was that he was sitting on the rail waving to the signalman. The signalman rang me up. I don't think Thomas Wabey was there originally. He rang me up and said, "There's something funny going on down there. Harold sat on the rail waving," and he says, "We've the job stopped, basically." So I said, "OK, I'll go down and have a look." I took the first aid box with me, and we went down and saw what the score was. And I then went back and got the stretcher. And by that time, Tom Swaby arrived as well. I don't know where he came from, but he turned up.
And was Harold still conscious at that point?
Oh, yes. It tied round his leg. But in actual fact, it wasn't bleeding that much, because the wheel of the train had crushed the bottom of his leg and more or less squashed it down and made it so that he didn't bleed very much. And he'd already tied his tie round his leg anyway. So the end product of that was that we loaded him onto the stretcher, Tom Swaby, me, and somebody else, and I can't remember who the other one was. We tied him down onto the stretcher because he was trying to sit up all the time, presumably with shock. And we then set off to carry him down the track. I was at the front. I was at the head end. And I was more or less down in the Cess side. The Cess is the left-hand side of the track where it drops down. The other people were in the forefoot, which is between the tracks. So I was, my carrying position was not right, really, for carrying a stretcher. And we carried him all the way down to the station yard. And we arrived there just as the ambulance arrived from Wakefield. And afterwards, the bloke said, "You know, if we'd have had to go down there and collect him, instead of you collect him," he said, "it probably would have been a different story altogether." But anyway, the end product of that was he was off for 12 months. He came back after 12 months, knocked on the door with a false leg and said, "I've come for my job back." And they gave him it, actually. He wasn't there very long, but he actually got his job back, walking about on one proper leg and one tin leg.
Did you go and see him when he was in hospital?
Yes, I did, yes. You, yes, we did. We both went, yes.
Do you remember him saying anything about why it happened?
No, not really. He seemed to take it, you know, it happened and that was it. He didn't sort of say anything about, you know, I shouldn't have been there or anything like that. He just accepted it, really.
Can you remember what your feeling was when you first got to him and he was there without a leg or without a foot?
Well, bearing in mind, of course, that Criggleston had already had a bloke with no head, it made the bloke with no head, I realised how vulnerable I was. I was literally in the middle of nowhere. And, of course, Waterhague, you can't get an ambulance there. So it said it's about time that I learnt first aid as part of the job, because you're going to get people fall, you're going to get all sorts of things like that, and some are going to be pretty serious. So I couldn't get to a first aid class quick enough after the Criggleston thing. So when I got to Harold's episode, I had been to first aid class and been told various bits and pieces, which came in very useful. And in actual fact, in 1988, the Queen gave me the Serving Brother of the Order of St. John, which is a very, very old honour. And I went to the library to look and see which way round the MBE was, and the Serving Brother of the Order of St. John, and the MBE was first, but the Order of St. John was on the same page. It was very old.
And so you kept up your first aid interest
I got 35 years worth of first aid certificates. I did it every year. You didn't need to do. You could last 3 years, but I used to do it every year.
It sounds as though Harold took that in his stride,
yes,
so
he
to
did.
Speak.
Yes,
if
he
that's
did.
The right word.
Yes, he did. Yes. He had no recriminations afterwards or anything like that. He just used to say, well, it's happened and that's it. I suppose, you know.
And when did the engine driver and the fireman on that engine and the guard who would have been with them, when did they find out that they knocked the man over?
Not immediately by any means, no. You see, usually when the train knocked somebody down and chopped his head off, of course, you've got to examine the engine, you see. So the first thing that they would do is they would either go to Waterhaig and examine the engine and find out what had hit the bloke in the first place. But you see, Harold wouldn't really, there was nothing on the engine at all. He just went underneath it and came out the back. The one at Criggleston, of course, there was stuff on the engine. And basically, they would find out. I don't know whether they found out while they were still in Waterhaig, but they would certainly find out by the time they got back to the shed. The console would have told the shed master down at Sturton, and he would have nailed them and said, you know, did you know you'd done it? And of course they said, no, of course.
And when he came back to work, what did he do?
He did the same job, porter. Yes. And he'd still climbed up signals. You know, he's still doing exactly the same job as he was doing before. They ended up with his leg sort of halfway down his calf. He still had his knee bendable. He could still do that, which made a big difference, actually. He wasn't walking stiff-legged. He could still bend his leg.
And
yeah,
what?
So then the other thing about that was, of course, that we got left with a foot, with a shoe, and I took a shovel... shuffled down the track and dug a hole and buried it. He's still there now.
And did you tell him what you'd done?
No.
And what happened to Harold Ellis in the end then?
Eventually, he went the way of quite a few other people and went to Australia. And, you know, it seems rather strange that Tom Swaby went to Australia, Harold went to Australia, you know, his son went to Tom Swaby's son went to Australia. Seemed to be a Woodlesford thing to do.